And welcome to Very Amusing, your one-stop shop for the stories, secrets, and shenanigans of a popcorn-fueled theme park journalist. I'm Carly Wiesel, and I just took a big sip of water. Excuse me, and I feel like some of it retained in my mouth and made it difficult to say words. Anyway, I am here. I am back, and I'm literally back because I am back home. I'm back home in Los Angeles, and I have gotten so much done since I got home. I mean, not chores or responsibilities, mind you. Every single suitcase is just flipped open with its contents barfing outside of it. I've gotten to the point, I don't know if you do this, where everything is so messy and like your suitcases aren't unpacked. They're just kind of exploding. Your stuff is on the floor. Where like you typically would, you know, at the end of the day, put your pants in the laundry or put your clothes away. And you're just like, I'm just going to add it to the pile. I'm just going to add it to the big old pile of stuff. And that's what I've been doing, which has made that situation not great. But socially, life-wise, everything else has been wonderful. Over the weekend, I went to this new art space / store run by Katie Kimmel, who's an artist that I adore. I went there for a workshop that my friend Jamie had invited a few of us to celebrate her birthday. We basically used like reclaimed wood scraps and made little figures out of them. We glued them together and painted them, which was fun. Everyone I was with was artistically inclined, which I am not. I'm not good with visual mediums, creating things. I enjoy doing it. Crafting's fun, but I'm not making anything that's cute. Let's just put it that way. I'm not making anything that's cute. The people I was with, wow. The things they made, stunning, brilliant. The teacher of the class, the artist, fantastic. Me, I glued two pieces of wood together and painted it, and it still doesn't look that great. But it was fun, and that's all that matters. We went to Pizzeria Bianco, which I think that's the name of it. They have one in Arizona, which Ben like sought out the one night we were in Phoenix, I think it was. Phoenix or Scottsdale, something like that. But they opened one in downtown LA. We went there. They have this pizza with, it's a like a no sauce pizza with pistachios and onions, which I actually liked. Wink, wink. That's called foreshadowing for what's going to come. I'm going to talk about pizza in this episode because this episode is about New York City. But before we get into that, I also saw Twisters over the weekend. I saw a new Glenn Powell joint. How fantastic. I adore that man. I think he's wonderful. And if anyone is in Top Gun, then I have to be a fan of them because anybody who's that close to Tom Cruise, I have to absolutely be obsessed with. But before we get into all the New York stuff and like all the things you should do the next time you're there, my absolute favorite New York stuff, there is also a lot of Disney stuff going on. And we have had a few back-to-back travel episodes. So I just want to address a few things. One, Country Bears reopened in Florida. Hallelujah. Fantastic. Two, Hungry Bear in Disneyland is getting a Country Bears theme, which I think is great. Anything that can kind of appease a 2000s Disney fan is wonderful in my book. And most importantly, something I have barely discussed because I was basically offline for a week in New York while seeing a bunch of shows, is that there is a potential keyword, Disneyland strike. Now, what that means is that Disney workers, a certain sect of Disney workers through their unions, have officially voted to authorize a potential strike. It's not all Disney employees, but it's basically a coalition of unions that represent around 14,000 employees across Disneyland Resort. Now, what exactly does this mean, especially for the workers? If a new contract with Disney can't be reached in negotiations, union leaders are given the ability to move forward with a strike. The main topic of discussion here is that union representatives are looking for increased wages due to food and housing insecurity among workers. So for everyone's sake, I hope they can get the compensation they deserve and that we are able to avoid a strike because they are getting what they need to continue doing their jobs. Cast members make these places happen. Disney parks cannot run without cast members. They work so hard day in and day out, and I hope they get everything that they deserve. News-wise, D23 Expo is also right around the corner. We're going to get into that, you know, later in the coming weeks. Literally weeks. I think it's 18 days away from the day I'm recording this. So I think it's 16 days away from the time you hear this. Basically 2 weeks. I can't believe it's back. We have so much to talk about. We will get into that later because this week we are taking a step outside of Disney and just doing another travel episode. Because you know what? It's about ding dong time that we do a New York episode. And on the day you're listening to this, again, it's a little confusing to be listening to a theme park podcast when on the day you listen to this, all of Disney's FastPass-like changes to Genie Plus have gone into effect as of today. And while this episode is all about New York, remember, our guide to everything you gotta know about these updates right now is in our episode about it. We basically got our homework done early around here, which doesn't always happen. That episode came out a couple weeks ago, so you are ready to go. Please check that out before your upcoming Disney World trip, because it should answer every single question you have about anything. So with all that Disney stuff out of the way, let's get into my New York favorites. Stick around after this break and we will discuss all the stuff I like to do and spend money on when I'm traveling. Whee! Oh my gosh, Armoire is back! Armoire is back as a sponsor of the podcast. I know a few of you signed up and are enjoying it, so I am thrilled to discuss them once more because what a glorious eco-friendly solution to try new clothes and new styles without wasting your money on stuff you'll never wear again. Y'all know I love goofy clothes. I love weird little clothes. But you know why I can't always wear them? Because my closet is missing key pieces. And for me, that's basics. A black skirt, a little black dress, white jeans, cutoff shorts that are more playground than wearing them on vacation. I own none of it. And with Armoire, I was able to test drive every single thing I needed. They've got the goods from designers like Paige and Lily Pulitzer and Tahari. It helped me realize that, yeah, everything I own goes with a cute little black skirt. The one that I test drove was fantastic, and I desperately need to buy one. Oh, and you can low-key buy them from them, too. That's because Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe. From cutie little trousers, to kid-friendly fits, to full party-ready looks, with brands that are high-quality, unique, and recommended just for you. You take a quick 5-minute style quiz, select items from this fun personalized closet they build for you, and items show up in as little as 2 days. When you're done, just swap them out and get more new-to-you styles. Also, Armoire is women-founded and women-led, so they understand firsthand why this service is so good. There's no more hemming and hawing at the mall, standing in a dressing room wondering, will I really wear this? Is this worth spending hundreds on? Nah, dude! Armoire is here to basically give you the clueless closet. Just endless options forever and ever and ever and ever. And I know I'm saying a lot about them. I'm saying more than I'm probably supposed to, but I just think they're really great. I just think Armoire is really great. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. $125 off! Just visit armoire.style/amusing. armoire.style/amusing to get up to 50% off your first month. And never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. If you've traveled overseas, you know one of the most annoying parts of a fantastic trip can be the struggle to stay connected. Hunting down Wi-Fi, changing your phone plan, incurring wild overage charges for what? Using data to map your way around a foreign city? Well, imagine no more of that, because Airalo is here to make that process so much easier. Airalo is the world's first eSIM store that solves the pain of high roaming bills by giving you easy access to eSIM digital SIM cards. Trusted by 10 million users worldwide, it's covered in more than 200 countries and regions, and really offers a perfect digital solution designed to save you time and money no matter where you are traveling. I went to Tokyo last October, and I decided to change my cell phone plan to allow coverage while overseas. It cost extra money, the service wasn't that great, but when I was in one park in particular, my phone's SIM card just stopped working. Just stopped working in a foreign country with no way for me to contact the friend I was staying with. I won't lie to you, it was pretty scary, and Airalo could have solved that problem for me from the start. So, if you're traveling soon and wondering how to stay in touch, look no further. Download the Airalo app and redeem the discount code I'm using for $3 off your first eSIM. Just install Airalo, A-I-R-A-L-O, so you can stay connected wherever you travel, and use my code AMUSING to get $3 off your first eSIM. Happy travels!
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. this powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to KundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Welcome back. I had so much popcorn. This is not about New York. I had so much popcorn at Twisters over the weekend that I think my mouth is so dry that it like can't form words. So if I sound weird on this podcast, it's because I ate a jumbo large tub of popcorn by myself. And then I got the shakes after because my body didn't have enough moisture in it. Anyway, let's talk about the Big Apple. So I just got back from almost an entire week in New York City, and I did my favorite thing while I was there, which is jamming a bunch of things into every pocket and window of time while in the city. Like rushing to get one of my favorite iced lattes before heading to the airport and running to catch the train knowing I have exactly 12 minutes to get to a reservation. I usually post about what I'm doing in the city on social media, but not too often here, which is dumb. That's dumb. I host a travel podcast. What am I doing with my life? And so while making this, I even had the sneaking deja vu suspicion that we've done this before somehow. But this year I could have sworn I did the New York episode this year. Apparently I haven't. And since I'm fresh off two New York trips over the past 10 weeks, wowza, it is time. It is time to discuss my New York City faves. And allow me to clarify, this is not a New York City guide. This is not a rundown of everything you should do on a New York trip, like broken out by areas and like itineraries, things like that. No, no, no. This should not be your full itinerary. These are just my personal favorites of each category of thing. The things I like to do when I'm visiting the city as someone who used to live there and as someone who goes back often. Also, this might be, I'm just going to say it out the gates so that you don't figure it out by the end. We in this episode are not going to leave Manhattan. It's just too much if we do. There's too much to cover if we start including Brooklyn and a story. Like, there's just too much. And honestly, like these days, now that I have a kid, I don't even want to blame Pearl for that. The truth is, like, after spending so many years living in Brooklyn, I just spent more of my time in Manhattan now. I just do. And we are keeping this episode streamlined. And still, even with that, there are too many recommendations. Just not even when I'm like, it's not a guide, it's not an itinerary, it's only New York City, it's only Manhattan. There's still too much to talk about. But first, before we get into it, we got to do a little recap about my recent trip. Because I basically just got back from being gone all of July, which is a long time. We spent around 10 days outside of the city with family, but then about five or six in Manhattan. And I had the blessing of free time to be able to go run around and see friends and see a stegosaurus. If you follow me on social media, you know that I'm so tied to New York that my doctor is still in New York, so I always have to do medical stuff when I'm home. But I had to get an MRI. It's a whole other, don't worry about it. I'm still good, but like health question mark. I had to get an MRI. And I was leaving the MRI and was like, oh boy, I need coffee. And I looked up and I was like, oh, there's a coffee shop that I like, which we're going to discuss in this episode. There's a place I can get coffee that is in the lobby of Sotheby's, the auction house. So I walked in and it was the purest example of like, you really get what you give out. Is that the right way to phrase it? You really get what you give when it comes to interacting with people. Because I walked up to the two people at the front desk and was like, is this art on display? Like, can I go look at it? And they go, yeah, it opens at 10, but make sure you don't miss the stegosaurus because this is the last day it's on display before it's auctioned off tomorrow. And I was like, LOL, cool. Not thinking it was an actual stegosaurus, which eventually sold for, I believe it was $44 million later that week. I got my coffee, like I got to just, I walked in and I got to find the stegosaurus. I got to talk to, I think it was the curator who knew everything about the stegosaurus. I know I said this online, but in case you don't follow me on Instagram or you forgot, this blew my absolute mind that America is the only country where if you find dinosaur bones, they're not government property. If you find them on land that you own the dinosaur bones. So some dude just sold a $44 million dinosaur. Like I can't even imagine. But I did so much. I got to run around. I got to get coffees and go to lunches and spend time with Pearl, especially because she stays up till around 10 p.m. when we're there because we keep her on West Coast time. And even though the weather was absolutely god-awful, it was like 95 degrees most of the days. It was so nice to do so much stuff and to see a Stegosaurus. And that's what I love about New York, even though I consciously voted to move away from it. As a Disney person, I love to go, 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 go from morning till night. I'm wired that way. My mom is wired that way. I'm sure many of you are also wired that way. It's just how we are. I often feel better in New York walking 15,000 steps a day than not. Sitting down all day, I just feel like I gotta go somewhere. So it suits me to be sprinting from a sandwich shop downtown to a show in Midtown within 20 minutes and praying the trains work out. If you are an Instagram subscriber, you got to see all of that. And if you subscribe now, it's on highlights, but only for a limited time because they replace each other. But anyway, you saw my high stakes trip. And let me tell you, I made it uptown. My main recommendation, before we get into favorites, which is, I guess is kind of a favorite, is that when you are in New York City, if you're on vacation, if you're there in business, if you're in there for more than 6 hours, you need to see something live. Live music, an outdoor concert, a play, an opera, the ballet, a little artsy dance show downtown, a huge musical on Broadway. Something, you have to see something performed live. There is too much talent here for you to miss out. And it is magic what these people do professionally day in and day out. I mentioned this on last week's podcast as I was recording in a 77 degree room at my in-laws' place. There was no heat. I had no internet. And I remember nothing I said. Multiple people have brought up stuff that I mentioned in the podcast last week and was like, couldn't tell you. No memory of what I said. But to follow up on what I said then, I immediately after recording that went to go see Cats the Jellicle Ball, which my friend Jeffrey reminded me, shout out to Jeffrey, that I need to specify that's not ballroom dancing. It's like ball culture, like Pose or Paris is Burning if you've seen either of those. Cats the Jellicle Ball, phenomenal. I hope it transfers to Broadway. It was absolutely mind-blowing. I saw Little Shop of Horrors. Andrew Barth Feldman is unreal. His singing voice is beyond anything I've ever heard. Also, Sarah Hyland, who I didn't know is a Disney person, was also in it and was fantastic. But even with there being a special, much-discussed version of Cats being staged in New York City right now, the best thing I saw was Oh Mary. I think Cola Scola is great. I'm definitely not like a Cola Scola diehard fan, but oh my God, they are a singular talent. The audience was howling with laughter. There was someone sitting two seats down from me who was laughing so hard, all of our seats were shaking. And I don't say that in like a complaining about someone on a plane way. Like I loved every second of it because I was having a great time, but I was like, I'm witnessing someone's best night ever. And it was just like being near that energy was fantastic. Everyone was laughing. And I even in certain segments, I like looked around the room and just to see everyone laughing like every 20 seconds was unreal. Oh Mary was so good. It was, you know how when they're promoting a show, they'll have like those big, I guess like inflammatory words, but they're like uproarious. That's what this was. It literally lived up to that. It was so much fun. And so, listen, just go see a show. If you can see Oh Mary, get an Obstructive View ticket. Okay, get an Obstructive View ticket. I spent like $80. I was right in the front. I missed about two jokes and that was it. And I paid, I think, a quarter of what the person next to me paid. Fantastic. Highly recommend. And that's usually the only tickets that are left. Anyway, go see it. Go see a live show. And if you're wondering, like, you know, what to eat, what to do, anything else, what to see, that is what this week's episode is for. So let's get into it. With my first and favorite category, my favorite coffee. Now buckle up because I have loads. To me, there is nothing like just getting a cup of iced milk with espresso in it and running down the street, tucking it under your arm and you're sending a text, just chugging coffee left and right. It is a lifestyle. It is a New York lifestyle and I live and die by it. Now, one of my all-time faves is obviously going to be Joe Coffee. And not just because Jonathan listens to this podcast. Hi, Jonathan. Hi, Johnny Boy. My friend, who is also a Disney person, founded Joe Coffee 21 years ago. And it is now, I'd say, the most successful coffee chain in New York City. They have locations everywhere. They just celebrated their 21st birthday. And if you don't live in New York, and if you aren't going to New York anytime soon, they, I don't know why I was like, if you don't drink coffee, but this recommendation is not if you don't drink coffee. They are currently right now, I checked on Monday when I'm recording this, this episode comes out Wednesday, they are having 21% off their products online if you want to get their beans. It's run by a wonderful dude. It is great coffee. The vibe in their coffee shops is fantastic. The West Village one used to be my, I don't think Jonathan knows this, surprise, was my go-to coffee shop when I lived around there. It's on, I think, Waverly Place and Gay Street, I think is the intersection. I'm pretty sure it's Waverly Place that it's on. And it's just like the vibe there is so neighborhoody and always positive. And every encounter I've had with employees there has been fantastic. So definitely, definitely check that out. And if things come together for a goofy episode I'm planning for next year that's a little left of center, but it'll be a fun one, Jonathan might make an appearance. I might force him to be my partner in crime. So stay tuned for that. Now, my long-term favorite beyond Joe Coffee is, because Joe Coffee is like you can find a lot of Joe Coffees. This one coffee shop you have to seek out because there is one location, and that is Cafe Integral. Basically, Cafe Integral has Nicaraguan coffee, and it is just really, really good. The owner is very hands-on and always has been. When I lived downtown, this must have been, I'd say starting about 13 years ago. Oh my God. For a couple of years. God, this sounds so long ago, but it wasn't, I swear. The coffee shop's been open since then. Oh my God. I am a fossil. Anyway, there was a really cute clothing store that was about a half mile from me. And there was a little front desk. And the owner of the company would be there selling coffee inside this clothing store. And I would go every single day for probably 2.5 to 3 years. He eventually moved out to this new location, which is in Nolita and worth seeking out. And just the coffee has always been great. It's just a fantastic product. I can't go on every trip because it's a little out of the way from usually what I'm doing, but Cafe Integral is great and I highly recommend. The two places I'm frequenting most often these days, though, are in Tribeca, where I have been spending most of our time while we're staying with family. And so these are worth seeking out if you are anywhere downtown. The first is Rigor Hill Market. This is basically like a farm shop, coffee shop, takeaway food counter. They have a little bit of everything. They bake unbelievable pastries, unbelievable bread. Like, they have this focaccia that is so fresh and warm. Sometimes you can get it warm out of the oven. They make all their own bread. It's like unreal. It's absolutely unreal. But they also source everything from a farm upstate, I believe it is. And they bring it all in. On Tuesdays, they have a farmer's market with their own farmer market goods. It's just really, really great. But their coffee is also exceptional. It's a great place to buy a little something. If you're like, I don't know, staying somewhere with a kitchen, you're going to cook. Getting pastries, getting a loaf of bread, getting coffee, getting provisions, and honestly sightseeing, because like the crowd out front is always, it's like a fun Tribeca crowd and there's a lot of tables and it's a great place to sit if the weather is nice. And my other current favorite coffee is Sawada Coffee. This is inside, oh my God, me saying a word on mic is stressful. Inside Au Cheval, I think that's how you say it. It's Au Cheval originated in Chicago and Sawada Coffee originated in Japan. I've actually been to Sawada Coffee in Japan, in Chicago, and in New York City. And for me to be following it literally around the world should be proof that this place is above average, to say the least. So I always go and I get an iced latte, but one of the things they're known for is a military latte. It's matcha, espresso, vanilla, and I think a little cocoa powder, but essentially, it's a matcha espresso drink that is known around the world, clearly. I like to get a latte there, but I get this, and they don't really advertise this. It's written in really small print on the menu, but I get the Tokyo-style sweet syrup. I think they call it Tokyo syrup on the menu, but it's like a sweet syrup that they add that just like sweetens your drink. I get a little bit of it. It costs a dollar, which like I feel like it should cost 50 cents, but it's fine. It's worth it. And I just get an iced latte with a little bit of this Tokyo syrup and it is absolutely delicious. It's the type of coffee drink where you drink half of it in 3 seconds and you're like, oh no, I need to slow down. Like usually me with a smoothie. It's that good. You will just devour it. And also, I learned on this trip, their cookies are exceptional. They have these cookies that are $5. They are gigantic. They are like size of your head gigantic. Like wide, not, you know how Gideons are thick? These are just wide, like big old wide cookies. And they have one with a bunch of sprinkles on it, which is good. But they had this new one this time. It was kind of like a blueberry cobbler, but a cookie. It was so good that I brought it back from New York. It is still in my fridge. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to be real sad when it's over because it was absolutely wonderful. And a little extra something about Sawada Coffee that's so special is that it's down what feels like a secret street. Like I lived three, four, five, six, maybe about six blocks from this place when I lived downtown for years. They weren't open at the time, but I had never, ever, ever even seen this street that it was on. It's a little alleyway. It's so cute. Highly recommend. They're only open, I believe it's Wednesday through Sunday, but it is worth seeking out. Now, not every category is going to have that many recommendations. Obviously, I feel very strongly about coffee, but we got to talk about cookies. We got to talk about cookies. This is a tricky one because obviously I love the Sawada coffee cookie, but for a long time, my favorite cookie was a City Bakery cookie, and they had it at Birdbath Cafe, which was in Soho, and they closed a few years back, which is tough. But the best cookie that I can point you to at this point in time is, oh my God, another word I have to say out loud. Le Mercerie. Oh God. Le Mercerie. Okay. If you're saying it like a dumb American, it is La Mercerie. Mercerie. I'm sorry. Google it. That's the best I could do. At Roman and Williams Guild in Soho. They used to only make, this was like a big phenomenon of a cookie. They used to only make, I think it was 24 and then it was like 60 something. They used to only make a certain amount each day, but now they're relatively more easy to get. You just have to make sure you go earlier in the day and like check in and I guess say your prayer. I've never gone and had them be like, we're out of them, but I know it did used to be a very hush hush kind of secret thing. These days, you can walk in even before the restaurant's really open, which is what I did most recently, and you can be like, I'd love to buy a cookie. They're not advertised. They're on a little platform on the side. You never notice them. But you basically, they'll like scoot you over to the POS system, and then you'll pay, and then you'll awkwardly wait there for 3 to 4 minutes, and then someone will deliver you a cookie and you'll leave. It is very awkward waiting for this cookie. I just want to warn you. When you go to buy this cookie and you're standing there, you're going to be like, wow, she wasn't exaggerating that it's very awkward to stand here. You're just kind of like in the way, but that's where they tell you to wait. And you're like, are they ever going to come with the cookie? And then they do, and then you eat it. And it is delicious. It has a little salt on it. It's like a thick salted chocolate chip cookie. It is divine. It is my husband's favorite cookie. It's really great. And it's like a really hearty cookie. So you can split it with people, which is, I think, the best way to consume a dessert while you're out and about traveling. Other options, obviously, that great cookie at Sawada that I mentioned. My old favorite place used to be Eric Kaiser, which also closed. That's my favorite pastry, like cookie, bread, everything. They closed. Very upsetting. Maison Kaiser was a way of life. But otherwise, like Levain, I'm over it. I'm going to be honest with you. I had Levain a handful of years ago, and it hasn't happened. Like, I've gotten them mailed to me. I ate them. They were fine. I think I've gotten them in LA. They were fine. I had them in New York, and I was really sick after. I don't know what happened, but I had a horrible, horrible, horrible tummy ache whenever I ate them. So, Levain, I'm not going out of my way to get it. Chip City, we threw it out. We threw out our Chip City cookies. We ate a few bites and were like, this is not good. And immediately, like, didn't even come back to the house, like, put it in the trash. Dominique Ancel is popular and it's great. I mean, their pastries are great, but I don't like difficulty. I don't like difficulty, so I'm not going there. I'm not waiting in the line. We're not doing it. If you have the stomach for it, go do it. Their pastries are great. Their Queen Amon, I know how to pronounce that one. Their Queen Amon is great. They have a lot of great stuff, but for me, I'm not dealing with it. My favorite place to people watch, it's going to be Bar Pisolino. Now, this is a little West Village spot that's going to make you feel like you're in Europe, and not just because they don't want to give you a lot of water and they have terrible service. I'm so sorry. I didn't even mean to put it that way. I meant like they're like Europe because you can like sit outside and hang out and have a drink. But wow, yeah, that really, my recommendation lives up to what I said. Now, they are this little corner. They're on like a great West Village corner. The inside has a few seats, but mostly it is outdoor seating that's wrapped around both ends of the corner. I love it because you're on this great corner. There's like a ton of cars, a ton of people. It really feels like I'm downtown. I am downtown in New York. I'm in the West Village and I'm hanging out, and you're able to do it at a price point that is not a $200 dinner. It's also run by the Via Carota people. It's right across the street from Via Carota, which is a celeb fave, a celeb haunt. If you remember, Taylor Swift went there, very big deal. But I love it because you can get a cutie little cocktail, you can get a fancy little coffee. No matter what you order, you can sit, have a nosh, and just enjoy being outside, hanging out. You can also sit inside, but again, sitting outside is like kind of the draw of this place. The indoor is beautiful, but there's not much seating. That said, I do want to send you there to get a little drink, an Aperol spritz situation, a cold coffee drink, pick your poison. But the tuna sandwich is better than it has to be. I don't know why it's so good. Like, if they sold them on a stand on the street, I would buy them every single day. Their tuna sandwich is great. I think it's like $8. Get that. A bowl of olives, a little drink, hang out, enjoy the day. If the weather is nice, it is heaven. It's really nice. It's really, really nice. And I like it, even though the last time I went, the service was abysmal. But it was so good that I had a nice time. Now, speaking of drinks, speaking of a bar, my favorite bar in New York City is Bemelman's Bar. I'm sorry, nothing compares to Bemelman's. I've had many, many wonderful cocktails. I've been to every OG cocktail bar in New York City multiple times, and nothing remains as good as Bemelman's. It's a splurge, and it's worth it. It is worth it. It will always have a hold on me. Cocktails are, okay, brace yourself. They're around. I want to whisper it, but you're listening. You're still going to hear it. Cocktails are around $30. $30. I know. $30. I know. But let me explain. It is the bar inside the Carlyle Hotel on the Upper East Side, and it is just so special. It is so elegant. It is one of the most famous hallowed areas in New York. It's my favorite hotel bar probably anywhere in the world. And while it's small and has close quarters, which I usually hate, you are treated to fantastic waiters, delicious drinks, and unbelievable views because you are surrounded by murals featuring artwork by Ludwig Bemelmans, the creator of those classic Madeline children's books. I looked up a little more on this because I was like, I want to tell you guys a little more just so you don't drag me for recommending a $30 cocktail. And in their release, and like all the information about it, they said, Bemelmans, the artist, was commissioned by the hotel's managing director in the mid-1940s to paint the large-scale murals that depict all four seasons in famed Central Park. Oh my God, that's so cute. I didn't even realize it was Central Park. In exchange for his work, it is rumored that Bemelmans and his family received accommodations in the hotel for a year and a half. We love that. We love that. Now, while the drinks are, again, $30, I know, it does come with free snacks. A silver caddy of nuts and chips and little, like, dry little wispy cheese crackers. And every time I go, I demolish that snack tray within 5 minutes. Ben eats all the cheese crackers. He never leaves any for me. Okay, he leaves like one, but it's still not fair. And that goes way too quick. Like so fast that I can tell they're a little frustrated that they have to refill it so quickly. But you know what? If you're giving me free snacks and a drink, I'm going to eat my fill. If you want to do this a little cheaper, because it does get more expensive than the cocktail price, you can go in the middle of the day or just like before 5:30 p.m. So you don't have to pay cover for the pianist or the jazz trio. There is a cover. I think it's like $10 for the pianist. And then the jazz trio can be, I think, like 15 to 25, I want to say. But if you go earlier and there's not live music, it will be less expensive. I mean, of course, it's nice to hear the music, but there is a perfect little day there that I've done before that involves like going to a museum, walking around Central Park, shuffling over here, getting a very pricey drink, eating literally so many snacks for free, and then just walking it all off while exploring the Upper East Side. This is not an itinerary episode, but alas, I cannot help myself. They do have a dress code policy after 5:30 p.m. Make sure to look all that stuff up in advance before you go. But also, even for being like a bar, they have a zero-proof menu, a whole menu of custom craft cocktails that have no alcohol in them. And I'm sure those drinks would be splendid. But while we're up here, we're up on the Upper East Side, you know, let's talk about my favorite museum. Because in New York City, there are more museums than you can wrap your head around. A transit museum, a Noguchi museum, multiple modern art museums. And before I lived in New York, I was obsessed with the Guggenheim. I was just like, the shape of it blew my mind. It's just like a big spiral walkway. It's pretty phenomenal. There's nothing like it. And then once I lived there, I was a full tilt MoMA girly. I was going to MoMA all the time. But recommendations aside, I genuinely think the best museum and the one after all these years that I like returning to most is, big surprise, the Met. Yeah, wow. Ooh, the Museum of Metropolitan Art is good. Who would have thunk? But I think the key here is to go and do it in a casual way. Usually with the Met, it's like, oh my God, so much museum. We got to spend 6 hours here until we're both like dehydrated and we need food. We have to stop for a snack to refuel. Like, no, take it easy. See a few things, identify what you want on the map, scoot straight towards them, and then bounce. There's no need to be like, ooh, we should respect these antiquities that we're walking through. No, you're in New York. There's too much to see. There's so much to do. Focus on what you want to see and just blow past those old vases. Because while you're here, you're going to want to see the Costume Institute. This is what the entire Met Gala, the entire Met Ball is based around, the debut of this new exhibit each and every year. Plan ahead if you want to visit it, though. There is a virtual queue. I don't know the cadence of it. I don't know how early you have to get there to see the fashion exhibit, but keep that in mind because, I mean, you got to see the fashion exhibit if you're going to be there. You got to see the fashion exhibit if you're going to be there. And near there is the Temple of Dendur. Dendur. I think that's right. An Egyptian temple that was transported to be housed within the museum. The temple is one of the main things to see at the Met. It is like kind of like their icon at this point. But honestly, it's not as exciting to me as the other stuff. I like to go to the recreations of the old rooms with all the furniture. I love those. They have those in the American wing, and I know they have them somewhere else. I was looking on the map to try to find it. I know where it is in person, but I can't figure out how to get there on the map to relay that to you. But basically, like, the furniture exhibits, I love that. I love, like, feeling like I'm in someone's house in a different time. Ooh, that's very fun. They also have a... It's like a Chinese courtyard in the style of the Ming Dynasty that is very rad. I found that on the map. It's Gallery 217 and 218. That is great. But personally, I love just the stuff that surprises you, like the indoor atrium vibe of the European sculptures. I love that. And then they have this little back wing of modern art where they're like, oh yeah, we also have modern art, I guess. And you go back there and it's like, boop a Warhol. Like, there's just wonderful, wonderful modern art back there. If you only have time for one museum and you have to skip a modern art museum, you can get it here too. It's like in the back. But they're so, it's great. They have a great collection. It's great. But I also love... Each and every time, if you're there during the non-winter season, check it out. They put art, they have special art that they put on the rooftop. They always like partner with an artist. I think sometimes it's site specific. It's a great view. It's really cool to be up there seeing art, seeing Central Park, seeing New York City. Phenomenal views. And the Met, obviously worth the hype. But there are plenty of other museums in New York City worth visiting. And this... It's like telling you to go to the Met isn't much of a suggestion because it's being like, oh, you're going to Paris? Oh, I heard the Louvre is good. Like, I sound cuckoo bananas by saying this. But let me also say the other museums I'm not recommending are also great. Museum of the Moving Image, which is not in Manhattan, but it's fine. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's not Manhattan. They have a Jim Henson exhibit, which is worth noting. The Transit Museum in Brooklyn is unlike anything else. Just a bunch of cool old trains. And once you go there, you'll be like, oh, every TV show I've watched that's ever had a scene on an old train was definitely filmed here. But my secondary suggestion for you, if you have time to go to another, see more art, isn't the new museum, which is currently closed because of construction, isn't the Whitney, isn't the Museum of Natural History, all of which are great. But it is, after you select one or two museums to go to, I'm going to recommend you walk around the galleries in Chelsea. There is really nothing else like it, in my opinion. Some of the best and most interesting art I've ever seen in my entire life has been at these galleries. They are unique and interesting. Sometimes it's paintings. Sometimes it's sculptures that you walk through. Sometimes it's an entire immersive experience. And like, I don't use that phrase lightly. Like, there was this one, and I wish I couldn't remember the name of it when I was taking notes for this episode. And I looked and I couldn't find it, but it was one where you like walked in and it was like a t-shirt store. And then you go through a little room, and you were like in an office, and you go through a little room, and you were like in a library. It was basically like you were a rat burrowing through these different rooms where they all felt real, but they were just made inside of a gallery. It absolutely blew my mind. Like, honestly, the most unbelievable stuff can be found in Chelsea. So definitely, you know, like, look around and see what is available before you go to New York. If you are going soon, the Gagosian Gallery on 24th Street, that's one of the big ones. They have this unfathomable show right now that I am furious I missed. I didn't have time to go there. I didn't know they had this. The show is so good that you have to make an appointment online. If you go to the Gagosian website, there's a little Google form. You like go on there, you like put in your times, whatever. You have to do it in advance of your trip, so make sure to do that. But this little like, this is not a museum. This is an art gallery. And their exhibit right now has, listen to this, Andy Warhol, Cy Twombly, Frank Stella, Mark Rothko, Donald Judd, Jasper Johns, David Hockney, and Jean-Michel Basquiat. All in just a gallery, just a casual gallery showing. I'm so mad I didn't go to this. Please go for me and tell me how it is. Oh my God, you gotta go. You gotta check it out. And while I know I'm being choosy about museums, but like, I'm telling you, walking into these galleries being like, am I alone here? Is this okay? And they're just seeing all of this art for free is chef kiss, which is hard to do on a podcast, but I think you heard it and you get it. Also, if you want to go to multiple museums and you're like, oh man, this is really adding up, look out for free days and free nights. There are often, I think it's like Thursdays in some places, there's often little ways to go and visit for free, which can help save a few bucks to spend on food, like my favorite hidden gem restaurant. That was a good segue. Not to toot my own New York horn, but oh boy. My favorite hidden gem restaurant is Tea and Sympathy. This place. It is a British restaurant, but the reason we're going there is for afternoon tea that isn't too fussy, yet is absolutely divine. I've come here in summer. I know, I've come to summer for tea, and it was still good. I've come here in winter. I came here once with my friend Jesse on an absolutely horribly cold winter night, and the place was nearly empty, and we sat for 2 hours drinking tea and having dinner. It was so lovely. But what I love about it most is that it is so authentic. Their sandwich choices, oh, they be British. Oh, they be British. Coronation chicken, parentheses curry, for people who don't know, they got it. Cheese and pickle sandwiches, you bet your butt I'm getting those. It is the real deal. They have so many delicious teas. They serve them in cute little things. I love high tea, but I don't always need the elegance of it, you know? Like, I don't always need a Mother's Day brunch kind of vibe to have tea and scones and stuff like that. I just want good food, good scones, good clotted cream, good tea. I don't need the 5-star elegant hotel service, which there is, you know, there's a time and a place for that. It's fun. But I love that this place gives you what you want in a casual environment with someone who really knows their stuff and keeps it very real. Very, very British, even after all these years. Oh, Tea and Sympathy. Like, if you're going in the winter, ooh, add this to your list. It is just pitch perfect. We are going to take a quick break and we will get back to you with plenty more recommendations, including, obviously, more food and restaurants you gotta know about. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back. We are going to start the second half of this pod with my favorite New York restaurants. There are obviously oodles and oodles of places to eat. And these days, I'm gonna tell you, I am not the best person to recommend them to you. If you want a trendy bar, if you want a high-end restaurant, if you want, I don't know, a low-end quick place. Well, actually, okay, that one I do have for you. It's this place called This Bowl. It is very trendy. It is very hip. It's kind of in the NYU area. It's like two blocks above Houston, and it's Australian, and they have little grain bowls with stuff on them. Shout out Foster Kamer's newsletter for tipping me off to it. It is very popular. The line is long. They have like a whole queue out front, but it is refreshing and great, and I have not found anything that is similar, even though I tried like Spring Bone, I think it's called, in these other places. That place is the place to go, This Bowl. But anyway, besides that, I honestly, if you want to know like what the cool, what the hip is, this or that New York food is, go to TikTok. TikTok is on top of it. They are delivering. As for me and my recommendations, honestly, I just eat at the same places every time, which is, you know, for staying relevant, bad. But for me, for a favorites episode, for my favorites of New York City, it is perfect. Because you need to understand, I used to be obsessed with going out to eat in New York City. I once spent a year eating my way through a list of like, it must have been New York's top 50 restaurants, just blowing it out at these top tier trendy spots. And now I am a simple woman. I am refined with my simple little pleasures. I don't tend to love anything new. I really don't like anything hard to get into, anything like that. I'm not waiting. I'm not struggling to make a reservation. I just can't. I can't do it. I can't do it anymore. Because at the end of the day, even like the best food I've ever had, I can get really great food at that same level of joy and enthusiasm without jumping through so many hoops. So after many years of Michelin star dining and shoving handfuls of bread in my face and everything in between, the places I am spending time and money at kind of need to hit three marks. First, the food's got to be great. For convenience, I'll eat near something on occasion, sure, like near a show or near plans or near a birthday party, stuff like that. But I'm not going back anywhere unless the food is great. Like, the food has to be great. I have to be wowed by the food. Also, the food can't be too fancy. I do not want to spend $32 on like a three-bite appetizer to split among four people. I refuse to leave hungry, so I will not go anywhere that sets me up for that. I just hate it. I hate it, and I won't do it. And most importantly, really, is that it has to be comfortable. The seating has to be enjoyable, and being there has to be a good experience. It can't be like a great restaurant, but it's so loud you'll want to leave. Like, don't, also like a bar seat. A bar seat? I don't have the core strength to sit at a bar. I want to be in a nice chair. I want to have a great waiter that I can gab with. I want to be able to just hang out for the entire meal without enduring back pain. So even if I go somewhere once, like if I go somewhere repeatedly, it has to hit those marks. Which means that essentially I am eating at two places in New York City these days. The first is, of course, my OG. If you know me, you know I go here religiously. Jack's Wifreda. It is my all-time favorite restaurant. It is run by a couple who essentially blended their Israeli and South African backgrounds into this vast and varied menu that somehow offers something for everyone. It has a large all-day menu filled with everything from green shakshuka to chicken skewers over couscous and salt and pepper fried eggplant and halloumi cheese and peri-peri chicken and this extremely spicy creamy green sauce that is truly my favorite topping and condiment on the entire planet. They have locations all over downtown now, but the Soho one is the original one. They actually used to be a few doors down in a very, very, very tiny space, which is kind of how they got so popular, because it was at first it wasn't tricky to get in, then it was tricky. But now they moved to the corner. They have this huge space and they have great people watching, because you can sit outside these little tables. The vibe has become very European in that sense, but it also has lent itself to become more touristy as of late, which isn't my favorite. Even as I recommended being like, everyone should go there. It used to be back in the day when I would go all the time, it was more like fashion adjacent people, culture people, writers, people working in the area who would go to the Soho location for lunch and dinner. And now it is more like people who've heard about it who are traveling to New York to going there. So just know that like it has this little like fashion background, but that's kind of the vibe these days. But also, that's when I was a local. I moved and times changed. But the thing that has not changed is the food. It is a perfect all-day cafe. Wonderful food. I'm telling you, their green sauce always hits. Also, don't be afraid of the stuff that's not the peri-peri chicken or the chicken kebab, because the whole fish, not only does it deliver freakishly well, I got it twice on the last trip. Like, that whole fish, like you can get it delivered and just like eat a fish out of a plastic container, and it's divine. That is great. What else? What are some sleeper hits? Well, the matzo ball soup is obviously great, but the malva pudding. The malva pudding is one of the desserts. It is so good. You got to get it. Also, the fries, dunk the fries in green sauce. I can recommend stuff at Jack's Alfredo all day. But basically, go to any of their locations, including the Soho one. I feel bad for saying it's touristy. I just want to prepare you that, like, it's a place where a lot of people visiting town go. But also, you can sit outside and it's beautiful, and the staff is always great, and the food is fantastic. And you can also get the green sauce to go. You can get the green sauce to go. The only other place I go besides Jack's Wifreda is St. Ambrose. I don't know how to pronounce it. I go there all the time. I don't even know how to spell it, to be honest with you. It's like A-M-B-R-E-O-U-S. Like, it's Ambrose. I don't know. But either way, I love going there. Now, these are all over the city. The West Village one is very cute and tiny. It's like has outdoor seating. It's on a quaint little corner that is quintessential West Village neighborhoody. The Soho one is larger. They have like a takeaway casual coffee half where if you like just want to get coffee and hang out with a friend, you go to that one. They also have the restaurant portion as well. The Upper East Side one is ideal for eavesdropping. Ideal. Like, I just go there and people watch because Upper East Side people going out to a nice lunch on the Upper East Side is a different kind of type of person than I typically spend time with. It is just wow. But I really just think it's great here. They have a lot of fancy coffees. I like to get an iced cappuccino, I think it is. It's like an iced cappuccino with a little bit of like foam and ice. It is nice. If I'm going to Uptown, I'll get a Niçoise salad. Otherwise, they have these little tuna sandwiches in the front case. It's like a tuna salad on a little buttery bread. It's just, I love it. Like, it's not anything out of the ordinary. It's just a really nice place to go. Their coffees are nice. The branding is nice. The seating and interiors are nice. And honestly, like, one of my favorite things to get there is just the boiled eggs. They have boiled eggs. They serve it with sunflower seed bread. It's just delicious. I'm a fan and I highly recommend. And honestly, that's it. Those are my two spots. If you would have asked me years ago, I would have been like, oh, this Korean place, this place uptown, this other place 20 minutes away from where we're going. We have to go there. They have this great appetizer. But no, I just want what I want and I don't want anything to be difficult. To the point that last week I was hanging out with my friends and my friend was like, oh, there's this incredible restaurant. And she made a reservation. Hi, Julia. I know you're listening. And I was just like, y'all, I don't think I can sit at a bar. I don't think I can sit at a bar for our like 2-hour gab fest. I can't do it. So we ended up going to a place that was new to me, which I will shout out because it was good. Reveille. It was kind of a French diner in Soho that's kind of a French restaurant and kind of a diner, like a bit of both. It was easy and delicious and the food was really good. Reveille, I think is how, yeah, it's called Reveille. And so like I was wowed by, I would go back there in a heartbeat. That's also a great place. But my two places are my OG places. The one thing I will say about Reveille though, we got chicken tenders that were on the menu. You get like 3 to a serving and they tasted like what McDonald's has hired oodles of people to do to work in a factory to replicate that taste. Like they tasted like a chicken McNugget, but authentically. It was so good. And then we got like a little bit of seafood. We got a hatch chili burger. We had like this fried, I think it was like zucchini swirls. It was really great. It was a really great restaurant. Reveille, try it. Or try my other two faves. Maybe it'll reach favorite status one day. That'd be shocking, but maybe it will, maybe it will. But often in New York, I'm kind of just looking for a restaurant that's neighborhood specific. That's why I only have these two. So if I'm going to somewhere out of the way, I'll find a place near there. But otherwise, it is Jack's or St. Ambrose all the way. Now for this episode, I actually did something a little different than I usually do. I opened up the topic to Instagram subscribers who sent in some really good categories I didn't think of on the food front. Thank you to everyone who responded a couple hours before I put this episode together. I was just basically like, hey, last minute, are there any favorite categories you guys would like to hear from? And thank you to everyone, my beloved Instagram subscribers, who recommended great ones because I absolutely needed to include this and would have otherwise forgot to. Ice cream. It's so hot in that city. You need ice cream. And if you need ice cream, you are going to Chinatown Ice Cream Factory. It is a family-owned business for almost 40 years. It is also a really fun delight to like trek over there from Soho or Nolita. It's really hard to say that quickly without sounding Australian. But they have fantastic ice cream, really great flavors. Like listen to these flavors you won't find elsewhere. Coconut fudge, pandan, lychee, ginger, red bean, Thai iced tea, durian. I got durian last time. It was good. Chinese egg custard, almond cookie, green tea, and oh, this one's great. Zen butter, which is peanut butter with toasted sesame seeds. If you are downtown, head there. It is great. Great experience. Love to get ice cream there. But if you are elsewhere, I would seek out Cafe Pana. It is only open Wednesday through Sunday, which I didn't realize, so definitely take note of that. Especially if it's hot out and you're Monday or Tuesday, what are you going to do? But my friends Lauren and Jen introduced me to it a few years ago, and it is Italian-style ice cream that is so creamy and so divine. When I went, it was slammed. You would think it was the only ice cream place in the entire city. But it's at 19th and Irving Place, which is not necessarily somewhere you might be when you're in New York. If you're in the Union Square area, you can walk over there. Sidebar, there is a Jack's Way Freda, a newer one in the Union Square area, and that is the one where my face is on the wall. Not to brag, my face is on the wall. I'm drawn on the wall. You can see me. I have little Mickey ears. It is right over there, so that is a little, again, itineraries. I gotta stop myself. This guide's gonna be as long as, the favorite list is gonna be as long as a guide by the end of this. But anyway, they have fantastic ice cream. Highly recommend you head there. And since we're on food, the other main thing my Instagram subscribers asked for were pizza and bagel recommendations. New York pizza and New York bagels, which unfortunately, I don't really eat much of either. I do not like New York style pizza. I like, I almost said Napoleon style. Naples, Neapolitan, that's what it's called. I like Neapolitan style pizza and I like deep dish pizza. And every time I eat a bagel, I get a tummy ache. If I eat like a small bagel, I'm usually fine, but like, you know, like a puffy standard, like New York bagel with all the stuff on it. Every time I feel so violently ill after, I'm pretty sure, and I've said this before, I'm pretty sure my body can tolerate gluten from anything except for an entire bagel. And if I'm eating a bagel, I'm going to finish the bagel. So usually if I get a bagel, it's a salt bagel and I eat the outside, but otherwise it makes me so sick that I don't know why I never usually get it. I will just eat like the lox or the sliced fish or the stuff on like a little bit of a bagel. Anyway, the point that I'm getting at is that I am not a trustworthy source for New York pizza, New York bagel, but my husband Ben is. And in what I think is his grand, very amusing debut, I will turn it over to him for well-tooled, researched. I mean, this dude has eaten a lot of bagels and a lot of pizza in New York, and I trust him and I hope you will too. This is Ben with his favorites. I'm calling it a pinch hitter. I got one, but it's a good one because he knows what's up. I will turn it over to Ben.
Hi, this is Ben, longtime listener, first time caller, with my recommendations for New York bagel and pizza. Bagel, it's easy. Thompson Square bagel, any of the locations. Pizza slice, Scars, Lower East Side. If you want a whole pie, Johnson Bleecker. Love the show.
Thank you, Ben. And he's not joking around. Like, he will seek out these places. He will go all the way to Scars, which is like, he'll walk like a half an hour to go to, half an hour, maybe 45 minutes to go to Scars and wait in line and get pizza because he loves it so much. So he knows what's up. And I would trust him wholeheartedly if I were ever to eat a slice of New York pizza and enjoy it. I'm sorry, I don't. I know what I like. And it ain't that. Now, my favorite neighborhood. Ever since we moved away and we just come back to visit family, we spend a lot of time in Tribeca. So my results are pretty skewed. It's now, I don't know where I spend the most of my time walking around, going to the West Side Highway, hanging out with Pearl, just because when we're there with her and it's blisteringly hot out, which it has been in two of the three recent trips, it is just too much. But when it comes to visiting, I don't really think Tribeca is it. It's a great place to be parked in, but it's not worth going out of your way for if your trip isn't already guiding you over there. You want to explore the whole city. You want to see things you can't see back home. And one of the best neighborhoods to do that in is just above Tribeca, in Soho and Nolita. These two neighborhoods are essentially next to each other. Soho is like left to the left of Nolita. Soho is south of Houston. Nolita is north of Little Italy. So they're just kind of like bloop, left and right next to each other. And it's basically just two neighborhoods that are loosely intertwined, dedicated to shopping and dining. And because of that, because they are dedicated to shopping and dining, there is way more to do here than in other similar neighborhoods. And yeah, ooh, shocker, my favorite neighborhood is the one I last lived in. But that's, it was not great to live there because it is mostly designed for visitors. Trust me on this. The buildings, the cobblestone streets, the stores just mashed all over the place next to each other. It is less focused on residential and more on places that you can visit while there, which just yields so much more stuff to do. I feel like I'm not using the right words to say that. But basically, living there wasn't that great, but visiting is fantastic. Other neighborhoods might have like secondary outposts of cool restaurants and those new shiny buildings all over Midtown with those new shiny food halls. But Soho and Nolita are mostly these old classic buildings, these beautiful views, these cobblestone streets. Again, the cobblestone streets. It just looks like New York here. When you're there, you're like, wow, I am definitely in New York City. It doesn't look like anywhere else. And that's why I think these areas are so special. It's also the ideal neighborhood to walk around because you can just walk for hours across both of them, looking at stuff, people watching, browsing tiny little boutiques, hanging out, getting a coffee. And while Broadway is full of chains and a lot of things in Soho are outposts of popular brands, in Nolita, it's a lot of smaller businesses and a lot of stuff you probably won't have in other cities that you come from. You'll walk past buildings and dogs and little alleyways you didn't expect. And then in Nolita, whoop, stumble upon a little park, Elizabeth Street Garden, or whoop, a cute little boutique you've never heard of. It is a 10 out of 10 for wanderability, which I don't think is a word, but we're going to coin it here, which I absolutely love. And you might be gagged that I didn't say West Village, because West Village is a gorgeous neighborhood. And it is a close second. It is a beautiful place to walk around. But I gotta tell you, whenever I'm walking around the West Village, I just feel unwelcome because it's so residential and it's so elite and fancy. Like, you can't sit on any of the stoops of the brownstones, even though you wanna. You can't, like, stand at Carrie's brownstone from Sex and the City, even though you wanna. It just always feels like there's this push-pull between the people who live in the really nice homes there and the people who are walking through who obviously want to experience the West Village for what it is. So because of that, and because everything there is pretty expensive, I just always feel a little like I don't belong. And I say that having lived in the West Village and feeling like I didn't belong while I lived there. So Soho and Nolita take the cake for me. But also, if you're going to Bar Pisolino in West Village, just walk around. It is beautiful. If you're going to St. Ambrose up there, walk around. It is beautiful. But I would say Soho and Nolita yield a better day of being downtown in, I almost said in Los Angeles. Oh my God, I need more coffee. In New York City. And runner up, if you're looking for stuff to do, definitely check out Dime Square. There is so much going on. That's where all the cool hip stuff is. Coming Soon, which is a fantastic interior store. Scar's Pizza, which you just heard about. It is between Chinatown and the Lower East Side, kind of. But they also have one of my favorite stores in New York, which honestly, I think is maybe my favorite store in New York City, which is Susan Alexandra. It's pretty wild because the list of my favorite stores to shop in New York is strikingly minimal. All of the vintage stores I used to care about are long gone. And even the new ones are kind of overpriced and the sizes are really small. Like these days when I go to one of these fancy little vintage stores, I don't even see stuff in size medium usually. All of the hidden gems that I used to go to are just, I don't know, they're gone. And these days, if I'm going to buy vintage, I'm just going to either wait for it to come to me or wait until I'm going to Rose Bowl Flea Market in Los Angeles. But vintage aside, Susan Alexandra is glorious. If you follow me, you probably have seen her stuff before, but it's pure whimsy, Lisa Frank, joy-filled accessories. But their customizable charm necklaces are really the best thing she has, I think, and the reason to seek out her Lower East Side store. Going there and choosing all the charms and deciding what you want your necklace to be is such a fun activity and also a perfect New York City souvenir. And I can't think, honestly, I cannot think of a better shopping experience while in the city. That said, besides Susan Alexandra, I think the internet has really kind of ruined shopping in real life for me, which stinks because I love to shop. I love to shop and explore and buy things and like be wowed by new items in person. So I have so few shopping recommendations because I don't know, it seems like everything is either the same lately, like the same cool hip shops have the same stuff. The same boutiques have like the same goofy candle and the same this or that and the same like whatever sweater. And it's either that or it's so luxury expensive, I won't even recommend it. Like the fact that opening ceremony is long gone in New York is pretty much proof that we've been doomed. Sadly, that's all I got. But if you are looking for vintage, which I know a lot of people are, look up James Valoria. It is a renowned vintage store. I went recently and I struck out. There was nothing for me there. But they are part of this like second floor mini mall of vintage stores in Chinatown. I was going to make a video out of it. I made little New York diaries. This was going to be the last one on my last trip. But honestly, time passed and I forgot about it. I haven't made it. Forgot about it until now. But visiting there is a trip, man. There are a ton of these tiny vintage spots all next to each other in like a kind of like a co-working office way. Like, it feels like a WeWork, but it's businesses and it's vintage stores. And a lot of their clothing, yes, will be on the smaller side. It is a little pricey, but it's cool and it's very worth seeing since it comes out of nowhere. And there is no vintage shopping mini mall experience like it that I have ever seen in my whole life. Otherwise, I do want to recommend Never Fully Dressed in Nolita. They are a size-inclusive brand from the UK who have really fun, pattern, glittery, exciting, colorful clothes. Otherwise, Fish's Eddy, which I haven't been to in years because I haven't needed housewares, but they have really unique home stuff. I use the stuff that I have from there and have for like, oh wow, a long, long time at this point. If you're downtown and near Economy Candy, definitely stop in there. As I mentioned, Coming Soon is great. But that's really all I got for shopping. But last and not least, we have a mega category. And it is, drumroll, touristy things that are actually good. Which we are going to start off with, duh, Katz's Delicatessen. Katz's. Katz's is good if you are a New Yorker, if you're in New York for your first time. It doesn't matter. Getting a pastrami sandwich, enjoying Katz's is always gleeful, always a joy, and always delicious. Use extra mustard. Also, sometimes just get a turkey sandwich. That's great too. Eat so many pickles that you have no moisture in your mouth like I do from eating popcorn at Twisters. Katz's is an absolute must. And also mind the hours because there is a chance that you can fit in a Katz's visit the morning you leave or late night before you go to bed. You can like pick up a sandwich before the airport. There are a lot of options, so make sure with their flexible hours you're able to do it. I think they used to be open 24 hours Friday, Saturday. They might still be, and it's really convenient. Oh, Katz's will always have a place in my heart. And right near there, if you were going to Katz's, stop by Russ and Daughters. I know I said that I don't eat a lot of bagels, but when I eat a bagel, it is because there are Russ and Daughters toppings. Their sable, their sable fish is like the best salty fish I've ever had in my life. And I know a lot of people usually do lox on a bagel, but here you can do like salmon roe on a bagel. You can do sable, which is so buttery on a bagel. There are so many options. You're here. I don't think their bagels are that good. I'm sorry. But they're good enough because all the fish and all the stuff you put on them are divine. And my third mega touristy restaurant, we have a few more things, but restaurant that's actually good and you wouldn't think it is Junior's. This is really something my mom introduced me to because my mom would always go to Junior's after we would go to a Broadway show. And I was always like, anything in this neighborhood is going to be gross and yuck. And like, no, Junior's is legit. Their menu has shrunk since the pandemic. They have a lot less options than they used to. But while being known for cheesecake, their actual food is great. They have great salads. I've gotten burgers there. I think I've gotten turkey burgers there. It is a perfect pre-show or post-show meal while you are in Times Square. Because if you are in Times Square, there are not many dining options that I would recommend. But Junior's is always where I'm going to go. And they have two locations in Times Square. They have one on, I think it's 43rd? I think it's 43rd, 42nd or 43rd. I think it's 43rd. And then they have one on, I want to say 47th. Actually, I'm going to, Junior's 47th? I'm going to check this right now. 49th. 45th? 45th? Huh? I guess it's 45th and 49th. I don't think that's true because I just walked past it. Was I in 45th? I must have been. Anyway, they have two within a few block radius. The more uptown one, the 49th Street, is usually quieter in my experience. But either way, you gotta go get some food after the show. That is the place to go. And I've been to all the classic places, but I still think Junior's is like the right price, the right experience, does the job. And other things that I used to think we're pretty overrated and not great when I lived in New York. And now that time has passed and I don't live there and it's not every day to me, it's not as common. I think the New York waterfront is really something special. On a beautiful day, like Pier 26, I think it's 26 or 27 in Tribeca, where they have city wineries, city vineyard. They have these nice patches of grass. They have these swings that you can sit on and watch the water. I was there the other day and I saw a cruise ship. Do you know how weird it is to see a cruise ship while you're in New York City? While you're in Manhattan, it's just like, oh, Norwegian, whatever. Hi. Like a water slide on top of a cruise ship just blowing on past as you are just sitting on the lawn, enjoying your day on the waterfront. It is just, it is wild. It is mind-melding. Mind-melding? Mind-melting. Something like that. Either way, it absolutely blew my mind. It was just so, so nice. That is nice. The Little Island, which is this goofy little park that they built just out next to the city, and it's like you can walk up the steps and there's a little venue there. That's pretty. They have reservations, I think, on the weekend. It's right in the meatpacking district. It's very cool. And also the High Line. The High Line is good. The High Line is fun. And I remember when it opened, there was a little like, is this like, do we like this as New Yorkers? Is this touristy? Is this blech? Like, is this cringe? No, it's actually great. It's actually like a great place to be. If you are in that area and you just want somewhere to sit, to hang out, High Line is great. If you are uptown, you need somewhere to sit. Again, Central Park, not overrated at all. Never went to Central Park when I lived in New York. Maybe went like 5 times. Most of those were for outdoor concerts. Like never just spent the day in Central Park. Maybe once or twice I did. Okay, once or twice I did. But I never just like made it a place I went. And now whenever I'm visiting, being in Central Park, Central Park Zoo, walking around, just sitting near the water with the little sailboats, just it's beautiful. It is so beautiful. And sometimes the touristy things are great, especially in New York City. I hope this was a fruitful episode. I hope you now have an idea of some things you got to do on your next trip. Maybe stuff you already planned on, maybe stuff you hadn't planned on. Again, I live or die by my coffee recs and I guess all my recs in general. But if you have any other specific New York questions, let me know. As I mentioned, I did do a little one-on-one with subscribers on Instagram a couple days before this episode, and a lot of things people asked for, which if you are a subscriber, if you subscribe now even, not to be like selling myself, but if you subscribe now, you can go to the highlights until they expire. And so you can see some of the Q&As we had. People were asking like stuff for toddlers, which I'm not quite there yet. Hotel recommendations, which I rarely stay in a hotel, so I'm not sure. So there are a few categories I don't know, which when we do an actual New York guide, I will do much more work to cover those categories so I can recommend stuff for you. But for my favorites, I hope you enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed. I love New York. It is the city I call home, even if I don't live there anymore. And it's a wonderful, wonderful time. I hope you have a wonderful vacation, either now or in the future, if you refer back to this. And yeah, that's all I got. Let me know if you have more New York questions. Also, like, the subway's so great. The subway's great. And the ferry. I've snoozed on the ferry for so long. The ferry can take you from Wall Street to Dumbo to Williamsburg. And then I think to Astoria. Like, there's the ferry. I need to use the ferry more. That's my message. The ferry. Thank you. Let me know if you have any questions. All right. New York City.
Carly, this is Holly calling from Orlando, Florida. I wanted to call and ask you, so my friend Megan called you last year, I think it was last year, to ask about your favorite theme park bathroom, and I know that we all chatted about it afterwards, but I want to know if your opinion of the theme park bathrooms has changed since bringing your baby to the park, and if so, what are your new favorite bathrooms, or like, what are some bathrooms that you feel really comfortable taking Pearl to take care of her? One of my close friends here in Orlando is pregnant and is going to be having her baby in December. So I want to make sure I'm steering her to the right bathrooms when she has her baby and is ready to take her to the park. Okay. Thank you so much for everything that you do and have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Hi. Oh my gosh. Okay. What a great and thoughtful question. Okay. So I think it's not that my favorites have changed, but I just have a new appreciation for when bathrooms are good. Because when bathrooms are good, they're usually new. The old ones at Disney are usually bad when it comes to having to wrangle a small person. But when a bathroom is new, it's just the design of it is typically much better for if you have to change a child while you are there. The first one that comes to mind is Connections Eatery. I guess it's also the one for Connections Cafe, the new building in Epcot. That one I would seek out to change Pearl in because their setup is so great. The lighting is great. It's spacious. Like there's in the middle, I don't want to call it a hallway, but like the walkway is wide enough where if you're sometimes this happens a lot at Disneyland. Shout out the Fantasyland bathroom. Oh, yeah, yay. If you're changing a baby, you are kind of on top of people who are there to use the bathroom. And that's not good for anyone. This one is probably my favorite in Disney World, I guess I'll say, oh my gosh, because there is like ample space between everything. That or the American Adventure Pavilion bathroom, that huge bathroom, that one is fantastic. So I would kind of consider those like my two areas of Epcot, like the two bathrooms I would use to change a baby. In Magic Kingdom, I've never been able to, like, I'll wait to get to one of those at Epcot. In Magic Kingdom, I'm unfortunately, like, really not able to seek out a bathroom. It's just that usually if I'm with Pearl at Magic Kingdom, it is like the big show. It is the big day. And I'm usually preoccupied with getting stuff in and balancing then Genie plus return times with her sleep schedule and making sure she's fed and not too hot and drinking water. And there's so much going on that I'll just suffer. I'll just lean in and suffer because, yeah, none of them are good. Columbia Harbor House, that one wasn't good. Tangled, that one wasn't good. None are really preferred. I'll even use the one by the entrance, which is a little better, but still not that great. The one right by Tomorrowland is fine. But again, none of these are great. And usually, like, in any story you read where it's like, things new moms should know about visiting Disney, they'll be like, go to the baby care center. But you know what? I did go to the baby care center once. And you know what they don't tell you? That you can't bring a stroller in there. So when you're exhausted and your child is just, they feel like a heavy bag of beans and you're trying to carry them and all your stuff, like, there are some days when I'm like, I am not unclipping this child to go to another location to clip them back in and walk all the way back with them. There's just a phase before they're kind of mobile where that is not gonna happen. It's just like for us, like with Pearl's age, she's just now learning to walk. She's never been to Disney World when she could walk. She's not yet scared by the noise of the flushers. Like, we don't have to go there to avoid that. The regular bathrooms work best. I don't schlep her to the baby care center. And honestly, I do like the option to bring a stroller, especially if I'm solo, or more likely it's the end of the day and everything in the stroller is a mess. Because speaking of Animal Kingdom, where I was there solo with Pearl, and I've gotten a situation where I was like, oh no, I have to go to the bathroom. She has to go to the bathroom. We're in the Africa area of Animal Kingdom. That, you know, if you go to Disney, if you listen to this podcast, you know that is a bad bathroom. And I was like, I can't carry her. And then, you know, she didn't walk. I can't like plop her on the ground, hope she stands, hope she doesn't crawl away, like in the bathroom stall with me and carrying all her stuff. Where do I put her stuff? It's gonna be on the ground. It's gonna be icky. That bathroom is so stressful. So I ended up going to the family bathroom stall in Africa, forgetting like, oh, that's me. We're family. Like, I've aged into that. And I ended up going in there and it was so great because I had to use the bathroom. Pearl had to be changed. It was too much to carry. And I was able to just roll the stroller right in, quickly go, quickly change her, and quickly leave. Now, was I anxious the entire time that someone else who needed the bathroom was waiting outside? Yes, I was. But if there is no line and you don't feel like you're taking space from anyone who needs it a little more, because it is like a shared facility for multiple reasons for people who would need to use it, it worked great for us. There was a changing table in there. We did it quick. It was really, really nice. So that I would highly recommend. And Disney Hollywood Studios, listen, I think I'm at a point in my life where like, I'm just okay to say it. I don't love Disney's Hollywood Studios. It's not my park. If I'm going there, which I went there with her for Fantasmic, I think that was pretty much it. We're just using the bathroom by Fantasmic. Otherwise, Pearl will never see some of the bathrooms until she is probably out of diapers. I hope that helps. And also pass along that baby care center tip because I did not know and was floored to learn that. Thank you so much for your call. You're so sweet to think of your friend. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And I hope you all have fun on your next trip to the parks. Okay, bye. That's our show. Thank you all so much for listening to this podcast that was, I actually almost said at the beginning it was going to be a mini episode, and I'm just looking at the timestamps, I'm pretty sure this is a full-length one. So thank you for listening to all of it. You can rate, review, and follow Very Amusing on Apple Podcasts, and rate and follow us on Spotify, or just send us to a friend. Just be like, hey friend, this is my favorite podcast, or share it on social media. Honestly, like, getting the word out to people who are like-minded who might like this podcast does, it's a huge deal for us, and I really appreciate anybody who has ever shared it online, on their Instagram, on their Twitter, or whatever other platforms people use. I don't know. I don't think you'd share a podcast on TikTok. But also like writing reviews, rating us, it's all really, really helpful to spread the word. And I thank you for then and now and always. You can give us a call at 747-CHURROS, send a voice note or email it to 747-CHURROS@gmail.com. You can buy merchandise at very-amusing.com. Follow me at Carly Wiesel on all the stuff and join the family at facebook.com/groups/CarlyWiesel. Subscribe to my Instagram, which I feel like I've said 47 times on this episode, but the truth is I'm really enjoying it. Usually we had a Patreon a while back. It was very stressful for me. I didn't feel like I was fulfilling enough, which there are two types of, ugh, I don't even want to call myself a creator. There are two types of people. There are people who like have no problem charging people money. And then there are the rest of us, which is the category I am in. I feel just absolutely like paralyzed with stress whenever I take money from people, but I have it set to the like lowest amount I can take, which is 99 cents a month for extra Instagram stories and extra Q&As and extra stuff. And it's fun and I really enjoy it and I love posting there, and I posted a bunch lately. So definitely if you subscribe, check that out, check out the highlights that are just for you. And yeah, I enjoy it and I enjoy everyone who is there. So for anyone listening who's a subscriber, thank you. This episode was edited furiously by Jeff Fox. He wasn't angry. He just always, you know, he just puts all of his energy into it. I almost said something else that I can't say on mic. And if you know what it was, you can guess what it was. LOL. Thanks so much for listening. See you real soon.
Hi, honey, it's Mom. Such a fun episode. You know how much I love New York and how much fun we have when we go see plays and go shopping. It's one of my favorite places. I'm glad you got to see Andrew Barr Feldman. I just love him. He is so sweet to me. It is so wonderful that you got to see three shows. I just love doing that with you. So you were talking about Burbank. Is that where we went where that big boy was and we went outside to take a family picture? And between my hair and whatever I was carrying, I was in front of the big boy, and we snapped a picture, and we couldn't see the burger or the big boy. I was shielding him with my body. Anyway, that was fun. I can't believe that Walt had a railroad in his backyard. See, I don't know these things. These are so much fun when you tell us all these things. I didn't want to ask at Tam's restaurant when we were there, that table 31, when we asked about the restaurant and they were explaining it to us, they never told us about table 31. How did you even know about that? That's so cool. But with your Midwest big personality, I mean, I can't believe that you wouldn't ask for that table. I would do that in 5 seconds. You mentioned Groman's Chinese. The last time I was there, I was 8 years old. It was really cool. I liked it. And we went to the Santa Monica Ferris wheel. Didn't we take a pontoon to get across from the land over the water? I think we did, if that's the same place. And I couldn't remember her name, but it's Minnie Driver. But I got confused because I kept thinking Mimi Rogers, so that's why, legitimately confused. But it was great. I took a picture with her. It was fun. It was so great. All right, Beverly Hills, I have a story. And since you're talking L.A., I can talk about it. So we went to Nate and Elle's. Funny story to everybody but Carly. You, me, and Dad went, and we sat in the back. And it was late afternoon, so like nobody was there except two other people by the cashier. And you said to me, don't turn around, don't bother him, but do you know who that is? And I said, who? And you said, that's Jonah Hill. I said, oh, my God. And you said, don't turn around. I said, okay, fine. So I sat the whole time looking the opposite direction and never did anything. Well, now it's time to go. You got up. You went to the bathroom. At the same exact time, the person that was with Jonah Hill got up and went to the bathroom. We went to pay the check. Jonah Hill is like next to my shoulder. How could I not say hello? So I went over to him, knowing you're going to kill me. And I said, hi, I'm a big fan. Think you're great. Can we take a picture? I said, we have to hurry. My daughter said to leave you alone. Don't bother you. So I slid right next to him in the booth, took a picture. We left. We're walking down the street going to 260 sample sale, which I love. And before we got in, I said, I have something to show you. And I showed you the picture and you almost killed me. It was very funny. It was funny to everyone but you. Anyway, this was a great episode, honey.